And that's the magic of coaching. Like, when I say to you 10 minutes, it's not because, like, I think that's going to make you a fundamentally different athlete tomorrow. It's because I think that if we nail that for 3 to 5 years, it could lead to unthinkable places of, like, really exciting positive feedback cycles in fitness development.
Hey, welcome to the Trailhead of Trail Runner Nation, where we go on virtual trail runs with interesting guests. And boy, do we have some fun ones today. They're going to teach us a little bit about training principles that will help you become a better runner and possibly even a better human being. If it's your first time joining us, hey, welcome. We hope that you're going to have fun with us today.
Hey, training principles. We're going to do one set per month, and it's going to have different topics. And this one today is on consistency. And we invited four of the people that when we think consistency, we think of these guests. Take a listen.
How can you feel more confident and take control of your financial life? You need to look into a coach for your finances. We recommend Doug Crumley. Coach Crumley is with Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. His team of financial coaches are there to help you with regularly scheduled meetings and a suite of digital tools that can help track your progress. Doug, what is a number one comment you hear from your clients?
The number one comment that I hear from clients after they've completed, you know, their first year with us is they wish they had started doing this when they were in their 20s and 30s. That is such a common wish that people had done, and yet it's never too late.
How do we get a hold of you, Doug?
I think probably the easiest way is to visit our website at DougCrumleyJR.com. That's Doug, CrumleyJR.com.
Ultimate Ears Fits, true wireless custom fit earbuds.
The more I use them, the more I love them. And you know when I know I love something, Scott, is when I lose them and I shut down everything. I go into panic mode until I find it. And that's what happens with these truly fantastic earbuds. They fit great and they sound even better.
And the number one thing is the custom fit. You take them out of the package, you put them in your ear, and you use the app that you download on your phone and they custom mold to your ear. The passive noise suppression that you get from the good fitting earbud is so nice. They're so comfortable. I could wear them all day long.
The thing I like about them, Scott, is they don't fall out because of the custom fit. I have a problem with some of those other guys that I need to pick them up after a couple bounces and see if they still work. I haven't lost these out of my ear, and I really appreciate that.
Use the promo code TRN at ue.com/fits to get a pair of your UE fits for just $199. That's ue.com/fits. Use the code TRN.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Don Freeman.
And I am Scott Warr. And today is our monthly training principles, a series of episodes that we're going to be doing one per month that have a specific topic. And we bring on different guests, different coaches, different athletes to tell us their take on that principle. And today's principle is consistency. And it's something I've been thinking about for a long time. I've been consistently thinking about it, Don. One of the things that I read in Atomic Habits by James Clear is he equated consistency with compounded interest. And if you know how compounded interest works, every day or every month or every week, consistently you make a deposit. And that deposit earns interest. And then that interest accumulates. And every consecutive day that you're putting money in and it's accruing interest, it can amass into an extraordinary fortune. And that's what we're talking about today, except we're putting fitness into this bank account. And we're hoping that that eventually will compound and make us better athletes.
And I think one of the things to keep in mind, and I need to keep in mind, is if you just put a little bit in, a deposit, a small amount, it's still a gain.
And my mantra over the last year has been, something is better than nothing.
Do you feel it's helped you with your consistency?
Oh, absolutely. Some days I get out to the trailhead and I think I'm supposed to do a 6 mile run with some stride work in it. And I just think, I just don't have 6 miles in me today. But I don't think that way. I think I'm going to go out and I'm gonna run down to this part on the trail that I know is about a mile down the trail. And if that's all I get, that's fine. I'll turn around and I'll come back from there. But inevitably, not once have I turned around. Once I get into the workout, I end up finishing the workout.
So my next question for you is, and we've both done it, we've admitted and we confide in one another. Yeah. Sometimes we sit in our vehicle at the trailhead and we just beat ourselves up because we don't go out there, and maybe we just turn around and go home, and that's a major loss. Do you think that it's more of a mental weakness when we're in that moment, or do you think it's more of a physical weakness? Do you think it's a body talking to our mind saying, take a day off, or do you think we're just truly weak in our brain?
Yeah, I think that the times where, and I'll admit to this, that there have been times where I've driven to the trailhead, sat there and answered emails, and then turned around and gone back home without even stepping out of my vehicle. I'm finding that is happening less and less as Good. I'm learning about the benefits of consistency. And we hope that this episode about consistency will help you develop better consistency and help you fill your reservoir and compounded interest of fitness. And to give her take on consistency, we have Coach Megan Roche, who's joining us. She is the duo of Some Work and All Play. It's a website, coaching services, and the popular podcast. If you haven't listened to their podcast, go check that out as well.
It's Dr. Megan Roche, and she is a graduate from Stanford and now in a PhD program at Stanford. And she's working right now on a female athlete program. What exactly is that? Are we building female athletes? What's going on?
We're doing research related to female athletes. So we've known historically females are just underrepresented in sports science research. And it's pretty inadequate to take a sports science article done in men and try to apply it to women. It's just not generalizable in the same way. And so we're really trying to churn out that research and understand topics specific to female athletes. So we do research on the menstrual cycle, female athlete triad, bone health, nutrition. So it's really exciting to see more attention being paid there and to get to take part in the research.
Megan, we need to get you on for a full episode where we can really dive into these issues, because I think it's fascinating for me, and I'm not even a woman. I'm sure that there are a lot of listeners out there that would benefit from that. But today's topic is consistency. How do you feel about consistency, or how do you position that in your mind?
That's an interesting question about consistency overall. So I think for me, consistency, it's like the daily drive, the daily motivation that happens throughout life. But there's all these sayings about moderation and the idea that sometimes you should throw moderation out the window. And I think the same applies for consistency. I think there's a lot of perks to it, but I think at times too, you have to listen to your body and know when to take a break, to take a rest. And so I think consistency across life, very, very important practice, but also important to understand when it's time to just rest, reset, and then get back to consistency again in a few days, a few weeks, et cetera.
As a PhD student right now and building this program, I'm sure that you have so many balls in the air that you're juggling. How do you keep consistency in your training?
I think for me, a big part of consistency, so two parts, I'm going to talk specifically about speed today, but I think, you know, my husband and I coach under Some Work, All Play. And for me, there really has to be that all play element in consistency, because it's the fun of doing things that really helps me wake up each morning and be like, today I'm going to get X, Y, and Z done, whether it's training or work. And that's a big part of what drives consistency in my own life.
Is it okay for things not to be fun, Megan? Are there times that we just need to just pull up our boots and go?
Yes. Well, I mean, that's actually an important question and an important asterisk is the idea that in real life, it's impossible for things to be 100% fun all the time. And in fact, if things were 100% fun all the time, we probably wouldn't recognize it as fun. It would just dilute that concept. So certainly I myself, like so many other runners out there, I struggle to get out the door on a random Tuesday. It's snowing outside. It's cold. Why would I want to go out into that environment? And so I think it's about the idea of also just embracing the suck and appreciating the fun and having those two right alongside each other and understanding that the juxtaposition of the two is what makes you appreciate the fun. And that's been a big part of my own training life and a part of what I emphasize with athletes.
I like the way that you just put that. So embracing the suck and making it fun. It can be bad weather outside, snowing, windy, cold, icy, dark outside, or you know, depending on what side of the equator you're on, it could be 115 degrees out there. I recently saw an episode or a little clip on Instagram that Ryan Montgomery, who lives in Park City, Utah, he was out running and smiling, and he's has his GoPro. He's taking a little footage and he's running along, just having a good old time. And all of a sudden he trips and just lands face first in the snow and just comes up with the biggest smile. I love the attitude part of what you're talking about. Embrace the suck, have fun, regardless of the conditions. You have the choice of how you're going to respond to the conditions.
I absolutely love that. And I think the other thing too about the suck, and if you are consistent enough in getting out and embracing the suck, you're going to come away with some really cool stories in that process. Because if we were out there running in the same conditions every day, like you wouldn't be able to like pinpoint that one run where you fell face first into the snow and were like, look at that memory. You're not going to remember that when, you know, you're telling your grandkids stories. And so I think that's the other part too, is it's truly about like the memories we make and the experiences we have. And the more consistent you are with getting out the door in situations which aren't the most fun, and in situations that are fun too, you're just building this like environment of stories and experiences and really cool things that happen in life.
Megan, were you always consistent in your running?
Actually, I would say yes. And maybe I think I was consistent to a detriment. So when I first got into running, I loved running so much. And quite frankly, I kind of needed it for just to be the best person I was going to be each day, for better or for worse. And so I chose to run every day, and actually in that process kind of burnt myself out and got a little bit injured. And so I needed to actually be consistent in running 6 days a week and view that as a form of consistency, as opposed to trying to get out the door every day. But I think for me, I just honestly purely love running, and I love running even on the days that it objectively sucks. And so that was something that was kind of easy for me to build early on. But also, again, it came with that downside of needing to learn to take rest days.
I like this take on consistency, because there's oftentimes I've convinced myself, oh, it's too wet, it's too cold, it's too hot, whatever. I'll find something to hang my excuse on not to go out. But it never seems to be worse than I'm conjuring up in my mind. I need to make sure that I stay consistent, erase some of those excuses, and grab on and just get out there, and then make the decision, should I not be running right now?
I love that concept of the mind as a storyteller. So I think my mind actually is a much better storyteller than I give it credit for. And that's actually not always great, because sometimes I'm crafting these magical realism stories about how terrible it's going to be in my head. And it builds it up to be just more daunting than it's going to be. And I think sometimes I need to take a step back and be like, this is my mind telling stories. So thank you for that. I think that's something I'm going to add to my repertoire coming up.
Megan, I want to talk about consistency in speed. You know, one thing that I have avoided intentionally over the years is speed training. Is that what you're talking about when you mean consistency in speed? And help me out here.
That is. And I'm glad that you bring up this idea, because I think it's a common point in runners where runners just feel kind of daunted by speed training. So speed training, I think oftentimes runners think about hammering repeats on the track or on the hills or just being hands on knees and being incredibly uncomfortable in running. And we really try to frame the idea, my husband David and I as coaches, that speed is, you know, running up a hill and doing a hill stride over 20 seconds or 30 seconds. And certainly you can build into more complicated speed workouts from there, but it doesn't always have to be this daunting, this set workout. And I think the more that we can view speed in these short segments and building up into speed workouts, it makes it a lot easier for people to grasp onto.
So even those little short spans or short durations, you think that helps in building strength and endurance?
Absolutely. Yeah. So we refer to those as strides. So power hill strides are a fundamental part of how we coach. We'll give athletes 4x20 seconds, 6x20 seconds, 6x30 second power hill strides. And after athletes get used to doing them on hills, and hills have a little bit less impact forces going on in the body, so it's a great way for an athlete to adapt to them without having the injury risk. After athletes acclimate to doing it on a 4 to 8% grade on a hill, we often flip athletes into rotating in some flat ground strides as well. And that becomes a build into working in some longer speed efforts over time. But these shorter efforts are a great way to prime the neuromuscular system and to get the biomechanical system also adapted to speed. And even though it seems short, I mean, you think about the Power Hill strides or strides in the context of a training plan, and it's actually a very small portion of training, it feeds into overall easy running in a way that just builds the entire running economy and makes easy running become faster over time. Often it can take 4 to 5 weeks of just doing strides and already seeing the impacts in easy running.
So you and David are both coaching. Do you have to talk some of your athletes down from their consistency? Is there a time where you can be over consistent and sabotage yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a common conversation. I think a lot of runners, for whatever reason, just love getting out there again and again and again. And what we try to communicate to athletes is running is about the idea of getting out there and stressing the body, but then having that time to take a step back and adapt and recover. Because if we never take that step back to adapt and recover, the body is not going to progress and, you know, perform better from there. But how I couch that is that's also consistency too. So for me, consistency is running 6 days a week, taking that rest day to recover, possibly taking an off season when the body needs it. And that's really important than hammering away over time.
Can we talk just for a moment about consistency with effort? Some easy days, some hard days, just being out there and putting an X on the calendar isn't always about consistency. Sometimes it's about effort. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. I think if you went out the door and ran the same pace every day, you're really, I mean, over time, maybe perhaps you get a little bit faster and you see this upward trajectory start to happen over a couple of weeks. But then I think that type of training, that style of training of just running the same speed constantly out the door starts to bottom out over time. And this is where the idea of variation, of injecting these speed efforts in there, as well as recovery efforts to allow the body to adapt the speed, it allows the system both, I mean, all systems across the board, we're talking aerobic system, neuromuscular system, biomechanical system, to adapt to the training and to become on whole elevated and higher. The other thing that I see that's interesting in athletes too is that if athletes that are just going out the door and running constantly and consistently at the same speed every day, sometimes that could become challenging as well. Like if you're getting out there and doing a speed workout one day, you can really start to look forward to the easy run the next day as the recovery. And it creates this sort of structure to the week that athletes find and enjoy, that they're kind of always going out the door each day of the week as a different training goal. And there becomes some sense of added motivation in that too.
Love it.
Megan, thank you so much for your take on consistency and speed and some overall philosophy on consistency. I really appreciate it. I think that you need to make sure that you're playing, and that's the focus that you and David have taken. Some work, all play. You can find them, just Google that, and you can find their website, their coaching website. You can see their podcast. Make sure you listen to that. Subscribe to their Instagram posts. I was just commenting that Megan has one on there recently where she's dancing that just made my day. It really helped me get out the door and think, you know what, regardless of how work's going or how my personal life's going, I can still go out there on the trails and have fun. So thank you, Megan.
I love that. Yeah, we've certainly worked to establish consistency in dancing over here, and it turns into a great warm-up when you're daunted getting out the door, which does happen frequently. So thank you for highlighting that. And thank you for this great show too. I just love this concept of bringing different coaches on here, different athletes. And it's cool to see the mix of voices and just appreciate all the work that you do.
Thank you, Megan Roche, for coming on and sharing with us your take on consistency.
Hey, and now we have the second half of the Roche team of Some Work, All Play, the podcast and the website. We have David Roche, who just happens to be my coach. And when Don and I were thinking about consistency as a training principle, I thought, who better than David Roche? Because he's been working with me on consistency, and I'm not perfect at it yet. And I don't know how many times in my training log he puts, 10 minutes counts, Scott. Don't not do the workout. 10 minutes counts. So consistency. Thanks for joining us, David. We'd love to have you back on the podcast. You've been on a dozen times at least now.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I want to counter one thing. You are perfect, even when you're not able to get out for your 10-minute run on those busy days. But it's such an honor to coach you. It's an honor to be on this podcast. Megan and I are the biggest fans of Toronto Nation. I'm a little bit sad that I have to follow her appearance because it's like, if a comedian comes up on stage and kills, like being the person that comes after, like it's like, oh crap, they're going to be disappointed now. So I'm going to try to bring something a little bit different, a little bit different flavor here.
Today's topic that Dave is going to bring to us is about consistency and aerobic training. Why did you pick aerobic training, David?
Okay, so I think this is the most fascinating thing, and when we think about long-term growth in athletics, So what aerobic training actually is an important variable here, because when we're thinking about it, this amorphous variable that we call the aerobic system that actually means like 1,000 different things that work together improves over 10 to 20 years. Whereas almost everything else we're thinking of in running training, particularly how the musculoskeletal system works, is on much shorter timescales. So in the background of athletic development, we have this pulsing aerobic growth potential. But most athletes, because it's on such a long-term time horizon, have trouble seeing it and fully exploiting it. As a result, they wind up finding themselves doing things like high-intensity interval training at the expense of developing their aerobic system, or taking long periods of inconsistency and long off-seasons where they're not running easy at all or not doing easy activity. And it creates these cycles where athletes think that they're at their potential, but they're actually only about 50% of the way. So throughout the conversation, I'll bring in some studies that have backed this up. But the main principle, if this is the only thing someone's going to listen to, is this first part, is that, as I was telling Scott, even 10 minutes counts. If you're able to stack up those bricks over a long period of time, they continually stack. And over the course of 10 years, you know, those little itty bitty bricks can form a massive aerobic wall that powers all performance, everything from a one mile race all the way to 100 mile ultras.
So David, explain to us, why does that 10 minute workout count? You know, if I'm trying to build my aerobic system and I'm on this training schedule, what if I miss that one day? What does that do? Why do you keep telling me just do 10 minutes?
So there's no downside on one missed day. Like, that's not a big deal, but if you start to have those empty spaces in training, eventually you're going to just be cutting off your potential development. And it all gets back to how the aerobic system actually works. So, you know, we throw around that term a lot. What does it actually mean? I mean, you know, if you're thinking about how do you get oxygen to working muscles, every little thing that branches off that is relevant. So there's a 2010 study in the Scandinavian Journal of Medicine, Science, and Sports that really detailed this. And there's five basic points. So mitochondrial content and efficiency, capillaries expanding around working muscles, metabolic function at both high intensities and low intensities, all coming from aerobic training, more economical oxygen use, and how that then all works together over years to translate into peak performance. The point that is really relevant is if you measure every single one of those variables, the first 10 minutes of training has a massively, there's diminishing returns after. So it keeps, you keep getting some benefit, but it all starts to ramp up right away. And you can imagine that intuitively, that when you go for a run, let's say it's a cold day, and you're wearing shorts and you go out and you're cold, and then eventually you just kind of warm up. That's all of these processes starting to kick into gear with how the circulatory system interacts with the cardiovascular system and aerobic system. So that little bit really adds up, not to mention the musculoskeletal benefits of just reinforcing the movement pattern. But when we're purely thinking about how the aerobic system works, there's just getting out consistently as frequently as you possibly can with in the context of taking your rest day each week, you're going to see outsized gains over long periods of time.
Let's talk a little bit about the elasticity of the aerobic system. I mean, how are we able to improve it, and how quick do we lose it? And if we make deposits, do they stick around for a while? Do you have a thought on that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because there is a lot of inertia in the aerobic system, which is one reason why I'm constantly saying consistency, because there's inertia in both directions. Once you get consistent, even when you take some time off due to like a work trip or something, you're in a good place when you come back, because it's underneath the surface. It's like plate tectonics. But similarly, if you take a lot of time off, it takes time, a lot more time than you would think, to sometimes build these principles back. And so the hard part becomes, okay, how do we isolate variables that are working on multi-year timescales in study or training theory? And this is the place that I think a lot of people are unable to see. And as a result, they don't value this as much as it should be. And so there's some fascinating, though, studies that came out in just the last couple of years on this topic. So one in particular from 2019 in the Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research looked at 85 elite athletes and quantified their training over 7 years. So this is really cool, because most studies are on like 6 to 8 week timescales where you can't capture these changes. This was looking at 7 years. And it found that by far the highest correlation with their long-term growth happened to do with how much easy running they were able to do. Not the how hard their intervals were, not how their specific periodization was structured, purely just getting out there consistently year round. And that's fascinating. But when you layer on this other wrinkle, I think it's even cooler. So this was from 2021 in the Frontiers of Sport and Active Living, which is a fun journal name. And this looked at cross-country skiing, which is a really cool area of research because in cross-country skiing, scientists are much more involved in planning training. So unlike running, where a lot of the times you're not getting this data, they found that the athletes that progressed over 5 to 10 years were doing 800 hours of training per year with almost 90% of that in zone one. So the lowest intensity zone. And the idea being, okay, we're not cross-country skiers, but cross-country skiing is the aerobic system being tested fully because it takes away the impact. So if we're purely thinking about the aerobic system, doing a ton of very easy training, as much as you can fit in the context of a complex life, does have its benefits. And if we can do that over time, we can progress a ton.
It makes complete sense to do so much of that zone one training, because if you think about our races or our long trail runs, we do a lot of zone one out there. There may be some hills and some climbs that spike it, but if you're in your zone one range, you can end up with a silver buckle if you're in a 100-mile race.
Oh, heck yeah. Especially because, like, if you think about downhills, once an athlete does build this efficiency through consistency, downhills can become free speed, where whatever their, you know, zone one heart rate is actually can translate to pretty efficient, fast running. And so, you know, when you're thinking about these long ultras, if you're able to do that, combine that with, let's say, hiking on the ups and running some of the flats, any athlete can go really fast, even if they don't think they're capable of that. Even if they think that, okay, well, my mile PR isn't fast, so I'm not one of those athletes that's going to run, you know, get a sub 24 belt buckle or something. It's like, yeah, you can, because by developing the aerobic system, you'll be able to run downhills and flats most of the race in an efficient manner, combine that with hiking, and you can rock anything.
I'm going to do a little parenthetical question here for you, David. For those people that are just getting into running that are listening to this, we talked about zone one training. Can you explain what zone one training is and how do we determine that for yourself?
Okay, great. So this is one of those complex areas and it is debated. So you nailed a parenthetical that is much more controversial than maybe I'll be able to fully explain. But the way we like to use zone-based training is how the cross-country skiers are using it and how almost all the elite training systems are starting to go to now. Because now that we have the ability to measure blood lactate, we can actually dial this in without necessarily focusing on heart rate, and it makes it much more precise. So zone one in this model is only a three zone system. So there's zone one, which is easy. That's under 2 millimoles lactate. You don't really need to know exactly where your lactate levels are. What that means is that you're below aerobic threshold. Essentially, you can talk freely. You could breathe through your nose, even if you're into that, though we don't recommend it. That's all one zone one, anything below 2 millimoles lactate. Between 2 and 4, so like between that and then lactate threshold, which is around an hour effort, that's zone two. And then zone three is harder than that, which encompasses a whole bunch of intensities. But, you know, below that zone one threshold, which is basically encompasses everything from hiking to, you know, easy running, just for some advanced athletes, even like somewhat steady running, throwing as many, you know, as many logs into that fire as possible is the key. And what we're seeing when we start to quantify training in elite athletes that progress over many years that aren't just good at 22 is that often their training is heavily skewed towards zone one, much more than you would expect. And then what is in zone two and zone three is just supportive of that.
If you're saying 90% of your training is in zone one, a person that's listening to this can make the assumption that if I'm running slow or training slow, I'm going to be slow at the races. Explain to me how, if I train 90% of my time in zone one, I can still become a fast runner.
So excited. This is the perfect question. And so as I'm saying 90%, it can be lower than that. It can, like, you know, usually you'll see 80%, 75% in runners. That's more at the extreme level when athletes are doing tons of training, particularly in skiing. And also, if someone is listening to this and they're accustomed to the five zone model, which is like maybe the iteration before this, zone one would also encompass some of zone two, most of zone two for some athletes. So if you're like, I've heard zone two training, like, that's okay too. That's still in this easy framework. So how does that fit into long-term growth? And that gets back to the magic of aerobic development. all of these variables that I mentioned before, those five things I mentioned, particularly how the mitochondria work, how capillaries work, how that fits together into metabolic efficiency, all of that is the building block for how you actually go fast. So often we're like, oh, well, I did like 5 weeks of speed training. I got so much faster. So the speed training made me faster. And what all the studies are starting to show is that that's purely resting on this aerobic foundation. So without the aerobic foundation, you're capping how much benefit you can actually get from more intense speed training later. That's why, let's say at the peak level, let's imagine an extreme example. So Jacob Ingebrigtsen, who just won the Olympic gold in the 1500 meters, so which is like the metric mile, he does like 90% of his training purely easy, even training for a 3.5 minute event. And that's because it makes him more efficient at the speed work later. So the magic of it for like a normal mortal, like me or a lot of the people listening, is how that fits together with speed. So as you keep this aerobic system developing, hopefully year round, and keep your max output developed, much through what Megan probably talked about with things like strides and making sure that stays developed, they feed back in like synchronous harmony, because your base building, your aerobic system gets better. As you do just a little bit of speed, it makes it so that your muscles are actually more powerful and able to put out more power. And that little bit of stimulus, it doesn't have to be much, then feeds back into making all of that base more efficient in how it actually translates to output via running economy. So how much energy it takes to go a given pace. And as that gets a little better, the speed gets a little better. And as the speed gets a little better, the aerobic system gets a little better. And that's how you can start to see the 8 to 10 to 20 year progression cycles that you sometimes see in people that like fully commit to this process. And that's the magic of coaching. Like when I say to you 10 minutes, it's not because like I think that's going to make you a fundamentally different athlete tomorrow. It's because I think that if we nail that for 3 to 5 years, it could lead to unthinkable places of like really exciting positive feedback cycles in fitness development.
Unthinkable places. I love it. I love that, yeah. David. I'm going to be watching for that with Scott. And there's another benefit to zone one. I think I just want to throw it up there for discussion, is that there's injury reduction. You're not hammering your joints and hammering the body and driving fast, because speed kills sometimes. It's good to get out there and put those base miles in, build the tendon strength, build the muscle strength, the cartilage strength, and really end up with a stronger system. So when it's time to go out there and put some speed in, you have the components to do it. So you're Scott's coach. Do you prescribe hours or miles or kilometers out on his workouts?
I mix it up for Scott. I love doing distance for the most part. That's what Megan and I have seen over time correlates the best with how we can then measure stress on our end. I think it's one of those individual preference points. But as over time, as we've developed a ton of data on our team, what we've seen is, okay, if we can quantify like a mileage number, that's often better than the time number in terms of what we then see in terms of outcomes on race day.
And I will say that one thing that David has taught me too is I used to report how far I went and what time I did it in. And that was kind of adding a little bit of stress into my life. And he said, I don't care how fast you did it. I didn't say do 6 miles in this time frame. He said, I told you to do 6 miles. So go do 6 miles. Doesn't matter whether it takes you, 45 minutes or an hour and 30 minutes. Just go do it.
If you like these messages, both by Megan and by David, they can be found at Some Work All Play, because David, this is good, good stuff. And I'm going to need to rewind, replay, because I'm sure I missed some of the things you were saying. So such good information. Thanks for aerobic training and consistency.
Hey, Don, do you want to have crash-free energy? Do you want to curb those hunger cravings? Do you want to support your fat-burning stores? You can help you do that.
They have proprietary low glycemic complex carbohydrate. Hey, that's a lot of big words. Here's what it really means. For us to get out there for a long time, our gut needs to work right. We need energy that's just slowly released just when we need it. And that's what YouCan does. Just ask sports nutritionist Bob Sieberhaar. We've had him on this podcast. He's a performance U.S. Olympic sports dietitian. He knows a little bit something about nutrition, and he promotes it.
Even Alex Smith, who is a former quarterback in the NFL, he realized he needed long-term supportive burn when he was out on the field.
And UCAM produces many products to make it convenient for you, whether you're on the trail or on the way to work, to give you the nutrition you need.
You can get 20% off if you go to ucan.co/TRN and enter the code TRN20, and you can get 20% off. Or, and this is probably the best thing for you to do, is sign up for their MVP subscription package, and you can save even more.
Our next coach coming up to talk about consistency and specifically running injury-free is Emily Torrance. Emily, welcome to the podcast. And she knows a little something about running, part of her history. In 2012, she came in second place at the JFK. That's a 50-mile run, the largest 50-miler in the United States. In 2017, she won the race. And in 2013, a top 10 finish at Western States. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, John.
Hey, tell us a little bit about, we just had David Roche on, and he was talking about his consistency in aerobic training. And one of the things that came up by training in that zone one level or a slow, easy level is the injury prevention. And that's what your topic is. How does consistency and injury prevention play into your coaching and your own running?
Yeah, definitely. So our philosophy is hugely based on not maximizing, you know, just not maxing yourself out. You want to maximize your training, but don't tap yourself out. And that consistency goes a long way. So by that, we mean being able to train, you know, from training cycle to training cycle, from year to year. And certainly we believe that there's time for down period as well. But backing up, part of that is staying injury free. So if you can stay injury free, that's going to allow you to continuously stack these training cycles on top of each other and to build on those previous training cycles. So, and by that, you know, I don't mean that we're necessarily every training cycle you're going above and beyond what you did in the previous training cycle. It's just that you are literally stacking these together and becoming more and more efficient over time. So when we look at the injury prevention aspect of that, I kind of tend to focus on, part of that is these, what we call sometimes one percenters. You've heard people refer to that, like these little things that you do outside of your run to make sure that you recover appropriately from that run and so that you're ready for the next run. So, I mean, I can kind of dive into sort of some big topics on that that I feel are important and that we address with our athletes and ourselves too.
I'd love to dig into that with you. Let me ask you this question first, and let's go into some of the things you're doing currently for the athletes. You guys are training at Sundog Running, and I want to learn about that. You use the term cycles, and I want to think about consistency. I think, oh, I need to run, you know, 6 days a week, and I need to do that for 12 months a year. You know, there is consistency. Well, it is consistent, but maybe not smart. Talk to me about how you cycle through your training blocks.
Typically, what I like to do is work backwards from a goal race. That being said, not everyone has a goal race, but maybe they have another goal they're working towards that we can kind of set as an end marker, but work backwards from that goal, and then you build these training cycles from there. So I like to do the most race-specific training leading into that, you know, 14 to 16 weeks leading into that race is where you're really focus on getting ready for that event. So if you're training for a 100-miler or a marathon, whatever it may be, that's when we're really hitting it hard in terms of, like, this is where we're doing the workouts that we need to do to be ready. You know, your volume's probably going to be a little higher during this time period. And then before that, we might have a base phase leading into that where we're just really laying the groundwork for that upcoming training so you can support that training. So that might be, instead of running 6 days a week, maybe we're still running 5 days a week. Maybe we're keeping volume a little bit lower. You know, sometimes we'll also switch things up if there's a big gap between goal races. We will do something like, for an ultra runner, we'll focus on speed for a little while and change up the training stimulus. So that would be a different training cycle. So we take 8 weeks and focus on a speed phase or a hill training block, just to change it up so that we're not always grinding in the same gear too. So I think the variety is important and knowing what we're focusing on and making sure that we're adhering to that sometimes people get a little bit like they want to do everything all at one time, and that's not always realistic. So we, that's kind of our job as a coach a little bit, to say, okay, we're going to take this time to focus now, even though, you know, Western States is in June, we don't need to be doing 100 mile weeks in January. If that's something that, you know, would be a top end peak mileage for that said athlete. So just knowing where those thresholds lie. And on that note, so I also fully believe in taking downtime. That's something that was instilled with me even early on with my high school coaches, college coaches, is at the end of a big season or after a big goal race, we would take 2 weeks of really, really light training. Usually at that point, we would even take 1 week of like very little exercise, maybe some cross training, but really shut things down, recover mentally and physically, ease back into things in week two, sort of get back into the groove, and then start transitioning into your base phase again. So I feel it's really important, yes, to do these things both, again, mentally and physically. You need that break. You can still be considered consistent even if you're not hammering out the running miles per se.
I love that gold nugget that consistency doesn't mean lacing up your shoes. It could mean, you know, putting on your swimsuit and going to the pool and doing some pool work or doing some weightlifting. Emily, I'm going to ask you a question that may bring out some vulnerability here. Are you ready for this question?
Okay.
Wait, Scott, who's going to be vulnerable? Is it you and I? Because I want to talk about this.
Depends on if she boomerangs the question back.
Okay. Okay.
No.
All right.
Here's the question, Emily. Have you learned this principle of consistency in preventing injury because you had good coaches and good training partners? Or did you learn this with the school of hard knocks by personal experience where you did get injured because you didn't adhere to the principle of a consistency?
I'm the former, where I've just been blessed to have really good coaches on my side and to have folks with really good philosophies. And also with my long-term success in mind, and just as a long-term athlete in general, not even just success, but just being able to run forever and do the sport for your entire life. I was fortunate that my coaches from an early age took that viewpoint and ran with it. Now, that's not to say that I didn't still get some injuries along the way. You know, that did happen. And I think part of that was just trying to compete at a high level as well. And a little bit of school of hard knocks in some of those things too, like where maybe I fell short on something. Clearly, I fell short on something because the balance wasn't there, you know, and it didn't quite come together. But for the most part, you know, I think that the progression has been steady, and for the most part, I've been relatively healthy because I've been able to have those awesome people in my corner. And I also took the advice to heart, and I believed in what I was doing, and I believed in them, which I think is also huge. You got to believe in what you're doing. You got to buy into it and not be second guessing everything.
Don has a metaphor that for me helps me visualize the idea of consistency, and especially as it relates to this injury prevention. And that is, if there's a hole that's filled with water, and all you do is you every day you go and you throw a scoop full of dirt or rocks into this puddle, and the first 10 times you throw a shovel full in, the rocks go to the bottom and you can't see any perceived improvement with filling that hole. But eventually you put enough shovelfuls into that hole and it fills the hole and the water runs out. And I think that as we're talking injury prevention, each day that you're going out there, you're improving your biomechanical and skeletal structures, your soft tissue, you're giving those things stress and they're becoming stronger day after day after day, versus maybe going out for 10 days and really hitting it hard for 10 days and then falling off the wagon and not training. And then you go back out for another, you know, 2 or 3 days strong, and then you fall off the wagon. You have to consistently shovel things into that hole. Did I get that metaphor right, Freeman?
Yeah. I think you could use it that way. but it's also important to know and not expect change in the beginning. That you throw a number of shovelfuls in, and yeah, you don't get faster, you don't feel better, it's still hard, but you have to have confidence and faith that shovelful after shovelful will fill that hole, and eventually some of that rock will surface to the top. That's how I use that metaphor. I think that even the small workout, even a short run, is still another stone or piece of gravel inside that hole. So it all counts.
Yeah, I think running is a hard sport, and it's something that you forget when you have been consistent for a while. But then if you do take time away, even if it's coming off of your recovery period for 2 weeks and you're starting back up, you're like, oh yeah, that's right. Running is hard. This is why people, you know, don't want to do it, or it is difficult for them when they start and they wonder how they can progress to be where they want to be, because it feels so daunting initially. But like you said, you keep chipping away at it and you keep putting those stones in, and eventually it all clicks. And then you have that one run where you feel amazing and you're like, ah, that's what they're talking about.
Right. Yeah. Then it just shows up kind of like that last shovel full that surfaces. And that's one of my favorite things that happens when you know you've put the work in, you keep your head down, you just have patience and faith, and boom, it shows up. I love that day. But I have a question for you, Emily. So you've been very successful because of some good coaching and because I would say some good instincts of not becoming injured, that you have learned to listen to your body. So what I would like to ask you, if I was running with you, I would say, Emily, how have you remained injury-free all these times? What do you look for to give you a tip that, hey, something isn't right here? What are some intuition or instincts that you listen to?
You know, there's a couple of different ways to approach that. One, I look at my effort. I feel like from early on, I was able to kind of get a good gauge of what effort levels I was training at. Not to say that I wasn't probably pushing harder than not on easy runs there for a time in college. I think that we were all a little guilty of that. However, there were also days where I knew I was pretty tired and I knew I needed to take it easy, and I wouldn't fight that. I would definitely slow down when I needed to. Cool downs after workouts were a big thing for me. I was way off the back sometimes because, like, you know what, I got to take this easy, you know, otherwise I'm just not going to survive. So for me, I think knowing when to slow down has been huge. And also, yeah, listening to how the body's feeling. Like, if you've got this pain that's bothering you on one spot and it's not a unilateral soreness, I think that's something else that can really resonate with people too, is like, oh, okay, this Achilles or this calf, you know, something isn't right here. And stopping early, so not trying to push through these things. You know, I trained with a gal for a while who was really good about listening to her body in that regard. And she was not afraid to miss 2 training days, your 3 days to completely heal something that was maybe starting to bother her. And then she was good to go. But, you know, if she kept training hard those 2 or 3 days and then kept pushing through, would she be knocked out for 6 or 8 weeks ultimately? So I think it's important to know when to shut things down, you know, or when to err on the side of caution with that sort of stuff. Like, it's never going to hurt you to take that one day and to maybe address it and have somebody look at it and work on it, or do some rehab yourself and see how it responds.
Giving yourself permission to take a day off and not beat yourself up with guilt or think that your whole body's going to fall apart. You know, you're training to become a strong runner, and to run further into injury is just not doing that. It's just dumb. And so learning to recognize and backing off is something you should be able to coach yourself to do. Find a coach like yourself, or bounce it off a trail running partner, and encourage one another to stay healthy and not push yourself into a chronic condition that could either heal in, you know, 3 to 5 days, or it could take 3 to 5 weeks or even longer if you don't act properly.
Emily, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your personal experiences and stories as an athlete and as a coach. You can find Emily at sundogrunning.com. where she and Ian and a couple other great coaches are there to help you. Their specific forte is training plans for people that want to take it to the next level in the ultra distance. So, Emily, thank you so much. This has been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for having me on.
All right, we're going to round out your bingo card. This is the first time in this episode I brought up the bingo card. So far, we've talked about consistency in speed training, consistency with aerobic training, consistency with injury reduction. And now we have Ian Torrance, who's going to talk to us with his spin on consistency. Ian Torrance has been on the podcast before. He's really well known in the trail and ultra community. He's finished more than 220 ultras. 27 were 100-mile races, and he's won 53 of those 220 ultras. So he has a lot of experience out on the trail. One of the things that impresses me the most is he has run JFK 50-miler 26 times.
Oh,
that's a lot of years, Ian. When did you start? When you were five?
Almost. It was 1994. So that was my first JFK. And a lot of people think it's a streak. It's not a streak. One year I did not start, and one year I DNF. So I've actually started the race 28 times.
But wow.
26 finishes. Yeah.
Then consistency is a topic that you're probably very familiar with. What would you like to add to this discussion about consistency?
Consistency is important. I'm definitely a consistent runner. I run through all kinds of things, all kinds of weather, hardships. It's kind of the way I release. I think it's a healthy way to release. But you guys wanted to know about what makes someone consistent. And I thought that I would talk about what makes me most consistent, and that's goal setting. And just having that carrot out on that stick to reach for, that's what gets you out the door or on that treadmill or get your feet on the floor from sleeping at night or not getting enough sleep at night. So how do you motivate do that next run? And I think having goals set out in front of you. And I think there's four levels of goal setting. And if you start micro, it would be that workout or that race. And as you work your way out, so that you'd have goals for a particular workout or a particular event, and then you would have goals for a season. And then you'd have what I think is like a 3 to 5 year plan. And then you have this lifelong plan. Those are kind of the four levels I talk about. And within those four levels, you set tiered goals. So you have goals within goals. Start with the workout or the event, and that would be simple goals like finishing. We can lose sight of that. We set goals like a certain pace or time or a place goal. Those are good to have. They keep you on track during that race or that workout. But if those become unattainable for some reason or another, I think having that ultimate goal of finishing is important. Crossing the finish line is a big accomplishment. Idyllic execution of a workout or event is a goal to have, or simply like having fun, doing a race as a fundraiser or in memory of someone special, or for me, sometimes not getting grumpy, not snapping at your crew or your pacer. Those kind of goals, yeah, those kind of goals are important. And I think those are important to have, you know, when you start a workout or an event. But we need to get motivated for those kind of things. You just can't walk up to the start line of a race having done nothing. So you need seasonal goals. And that race is your A race. So that's your main goal. But then you can have B races, test races, races that you allow yourself to make errors in, to learn from. So when you get to your A race, you don't have those mistakes at that time.
Ian, I'm envisioning as you're talking about all these goals, you know, how do you keep track of this? Do you have a big whiteboard in one of your rooms at your house? Or do you have like some kind of a computer program that you keep track of all these different levels of goals? Are they written down? Are some of them just, you know, in your mind? Or how do you keep track of all these goals?
So let me start with the training log. So I do keep a training log. And mine's really easy. It's Strava. Mm-hmm. So that's what I use nowadays. I do have a bookcase here that has every run on paper from my days in high school.
Wow.
So I can go back in high school and look at what I was doing when I was training for the 1 mile race, you know, in the 11th grade. So, or I can go to college and see what I was doing when I was training for the 10K. And then I can also look at, you know, how did I train for my first JFK? You know, I have that on paper. It exists. But now that we have the digital interface, I use Strava now to keep track of what I do. And I also like, again, the motivation. You know, it's something that helps keep me consistent is sharing my workouts with other people, whether it be an audience or athletes that I coach. So I like to, you know, be consistent because I like to teach that. And, you know, I tell my athletes that that's the most important thing. And if I'm not doing it, then that's stupid. So I think you got to share that with them and they can see what I'm doing. And I think that creates kind of a bond and some respect along the way. But yeah, I do create a year long. I do create seasonal goals. Nowadays, you know, I'll be honest that JFK is really always ends up being my A race. And it has for the last couple of years. Just getting to that race healthy and starting it and finishing it. Those are really my priorities. There are some other goals I set along the way, like time goals and things like that. But things have changed. I've gotten older and I'm not as competitive and as fast as I used to be. So you got to change and morph those goals to keep you getting out the door, right? So, and finishing JFK is huge. And you know, you can't do that if you don't do anything else the rest of the year. With that being said, we've talked about the workout / event planning or goal setting. We've talked about seasonal goal setting. How about the 3 to 5 year goal setting? This is interesting because some people can actually do this in maybe a year or two. So it just depends on the individual. And I call it a 3 to 5 year goal because you don't want to over expect and create that stress. So giving yourself 5 years to do something like finishing your first 100 mile race, I think that's adequate time to do that. If you just made it a seasonal goal, I don't think that's realistic because what if you just started doing ultras? Doing a 100 mile race in your first year of ultras or even running is not realistic. So it's going to be a lot harder to be consistent when you're not shooting for goals that aren't obtainable. So yeah, three examples of 3 to 5 year goals are finishing your first ultra or finishing your first 100 or nowadays 250 mile race, working your weekly volume into something that exceeds 50 miles per week. These are just examples. You know, different people will need different goals. You know, setting PRs in it may be shorter distances like 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons, maybe saying you're going to set an age group win or set an age group record at a particular race, qualifying for a specific event, whether it be like Western States, Cascade Crest, UTMB, Hard Rock, those kind of things. Those are 3 to 5 year goals. I think if you find an event that you're passionate about and you like to go back to and you have fun there, I think putting that on your yearly list forever or as long as you can will help get you out the door too. So like I was talking about JFK, that gets me out the door. How about running a race in every state? Something like that, or simply being an ultra role model, ultra running role model. I think that's important too. I was just talking about why I put my workouts on Strava so that the athletes I coach can see what I'm doing. I think that goes a long way. And I have athletes who are a lot faster and more talented than I am, but they still see that and they still like to see that their coach is still out there doing something.
I've got to ask you this. Why are you so passionate about the JFK? What brings you back to that race that makes it special? It's on the other side of the country for us, so we don't get the same vibe and the buzz. Why is it so special?
A lot of reasons. I ran JFK as my first ultra in 1994.
Okay.
It was my hometown ultra, so I grew up like an hour from there. So I ran on that section of the AT a lot. I ran on the CNO Canal section a lot, so I was really familiar with the course. My parents don't live there anymore. They moved to upstate New York, but it's my homecoming. So I go back every year and get to see where I grew up. Sundog Running is also the official coaching sponsor of JFK. So we help athletes do the race and part of the proceeds we donate back to the JFK organization. It's one of the oldest ultramarathons in North America. And it's also a diverse course. You have gnarly trail, you have a little bit of good trail, you got some roads, you got some hills, you got some flat, you got some towpath. And the scenery is not bad too. And it's a great time of year. I can go there and usually not worry about dying of heat stroke and getting nauseous.
I love your take on consistency, Ian, and you, proof is in the pudding, you know, 220 ultras, setting those annual goals or making a goal to go back to a race that you've always gone to or however you want to shape it. That's how it's going to motivate you to get out the door every day and to do those daily workouts and to stay consistency with the every day, every week training. I love that. Let's talk a little bit before we wrap up here. Tell us a little bit about sundogrunning.com.
Sundog Running is a coaching company that me and my wife started, and we have several other athletes. We have Eric Sensman and Will Baldwin, who are both in Flagstaff, Arizona, Ron Hammett, who used to be in Las Vegas, but now is in Florida, and Jim Sweeney, who's in upstate New York. And we all work together to coach athletes. Sundog Running is also, we hold a camp in Flagstaff, Arizona during the summer. It's a pretty low-key camp, small numbers, pretty hands-on, grassroots type of camp. We might be starting one in the desert of Southern California near Death Valley next winter. And then we also put on events as well. We put on the Flagstaff Line 100-mile trail race from Flagstaff to the Grand Canyon on the Arizona Trail Association. It also has a mountain bike race, 100-mile mountain bike race, and a 55K, and that raises funds for the Arizona Trail Association. We race direct the Flagstaff Marathon, which takes place on trails just north of Flagstaff, and that raises money for Coconino County Community College's cross-country team. And then we just picked up this year in Lone Pine, California, the Wild Wild West Marathon, 50K and 50 mile. And that's in May. So that'll be the first time we do that race.
Hey, Ian, I thought about you today. We were talking to Eric Clifton and we were talking about his crazy spandex type pants that he wore, very colorful. And it made me think of you because one of the pictures that stands out in my mind is a photo of you wearing some crazy pants that are very similar. Any correlation there?
So Eric Clifton is one of my ultra running heroes, and it's no coincidence that my tights look like his tights because he made my tights.
Oh.
And I have probably a half dozen pairs that are still in my closet, and I actually still fitted to them. And I met Eric at the Old Dominion 100, and that was probably in 1997 or 98. And he wasn't running the race. He was there. He may have been helping someone, but I finished and we started talking. He was just hanging out at the finish line and we became really good friends, and we've raced each other extensively. We've been on the same JFK running team, and I've hung out with him a lot. I admire him. He's over 60 and still crushing it. And I mean, you want to talk about consistency and somebody to act as a role model or to aspire to. And he's definitely one of those people.
Well, you're one of those people too, Ian. We really appreciate you coming on, and we've had you on in the past, and we look forward to having you on again if that's all right.
Boy, our couples, this was a family episode. We had two husband and wife coaching couples that came on, and boy, they really had some great things. I took a lot of notes, and I think I'm going to be better at my consistency because of some of their tips.
What's crazy is they're all four podium athletes and great experience and can speak very well on these topics. And I learned something today too. I learned that it's just about getting out there and putting in a little work. And I'm going to start reframing and give myself permission and calling it a win. If I get out there and get down the trail, that's already a win. So that's how I'm going to measure success. I sound like I'm just a big slug sitting out there at the beginning of the trailhead. It's not true, but sometimes it's pretty heavy to get yourself out and get going.
Let's make a recommitment now to be more consistent. Get out to the trail and run
miles.
congratulations. You have made it to the end of the podcast. And this is a time when we give a heartfelt thanks to the people that support this podcast.
And we'd like to thank our Patreon members. We appreciate all your contributions. And if you would like to become a Patreon member, you can go to the Patreon page and search for Trail Runner Nation.
And you can also go to our webpage and hit the support button at the top of the page. We want to give a special shout out and thanks to Doug Crumley. He is a business Patreon supporter. Doug Crumley is a private wealth advisor with Crumley & Associates, which is a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. He's like a good coach. When you have the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. You can find out more by going to Doug Crumley Jr. .com.
We'd like to thank our producer and editor, Ryan War.
Our social media expert, Yana Gibalova.
And we'd like to thank Kyle Richardson, who composed and performed our theme music.